I'm Ashley Legasic.
And I'm Catherine DeClercq.
And we make up CTV's newest podcast, Life Unmasked.
We'll bring you everything you need to know about exactly how we're going to return to normal life post-pandemic.
New episodes come out every Thursday morning on iHeartRadio, and they're available on all streaming platforms later in the day.
We hope you'll tune in.
We begin with developing news. Charting Canada's pandemic path, stricter travel restrictions for more countries, and the new testing rules that will affect thousands of people coming home.
Travel measures could change at any moment. Our government's top priority is protecting Canadians' health and safety.
The international concern over the Omicron variant prompting further action from the federal government. Good evening. In just the last few moments, additional cases have been confirmed across the country.
And while it remains unclear just how transmissible the strain might be, Ottawa is also accelerating action on vaccine boosters. We begin our coverage with CTV's Glenn McGregor.
With Omicron variant cases rising across the world, new mandatory airport tests to slow its spread to Canada.
All air travelers coming from outside Canada, apart from the United States, will now need to be tested at the airport in which they are landing in Canada, whether they are vaccinated or unvaccinated. They will then need to isolate themselves until they get the result of their test.
The government is also completely barring foreign travelers who spent time in Nigeria, Malawi, or Egypt in the previous 2 weeks, on top of the 7 Southern African nations already on the no-fly list. It will consult with provinces to see, if needed in future, arrival tests could also be used for travelers coming from the U.S., by air or by land. And the government is asking its Immunization Advisory Committee for guidance on accelerating booster shots.
I want to ask all Canadians to remain cautious and prudent. The pandemic is not over.
Today, a new case of the variant reported in Alberta and another in B.C., added to the previously confirmed cases in Ontario and Quebec.
We don't know yet whether or not vaccine effectiveness will be impacted by this variant. It's too early to tell.
44 Omicron cases have been detected in 11 European Union countries. Europe officials tried to soothe growing fears, saying all cases so far have shown either mild symptoms or none at all.
The current vaccines provide protection, and we need to ensure that those who are eligible for boosting get the booster doses.
The World Health Organization today again warned against imposing travel bans, saying they don't work and can adversely impact global health efforts during a pandemic by disincentivizing countries to report and share epidemiological and sequencing data.
With the holiday season approaching, the government isn't adding any new requirements for travel within Canada, at least for now. Glenn McGregor, CTV News, Ottawa.
Meanwhile, travelers within Canada can no longer board a plane or train without being fully vaccinated. The policy for anyone over the age of 12 came into effect today. There had been a grace period that allowed unvaccinated travelers to board if they had a negative COVID-19 test, but that will no longer be accepted with limited exceptions. Air Canada and WestJet have confirmed they will ask for proof from all travelers. The federal policy does not apply to commuter trains.
And re-entry test requirements were lifted today for fully vaccinated Canadians returning from the U.S. and abroad. Anyone out of the country for less than 72 hours no longer needs to provide proof of a negative COVID-19 test. But a molecular test is still required upon re-entry for those taking trips lasting more than 3 days. Here in Ontario, the spread of Omicron is being watched very closely.
Specifically, the healthcare system's ability to respond to a possible wave of cases. CTV's Queen's Park Bureau Chief Colin DeMello is live with more. Colin, this comes as Ontario reaches a grim figure.
10,000 lives, Nathan. That's how many have been lost since the beginning of the pandemic here in Ontario. And the Ontario Hospital Association says thousands more lives have been impacted because of canceled or delayed surgeries. That is the reality when the healthcare system gets overwhelmed. And there are some suggestions that this time during the fourth wave, it might not be able to keep up. As the world grapples with the Omicron variant, Ontario has reached a grim COVID-19 milestone. 10,000 people have lost their lives to the virus in this province, more than 4,000 of them in long-term care.
The loss of any life is extremely sad, and our condolences go to the families of those who have lost family members.
But the province's concerns are now turning to a new threat, with four cases of Omicron in Ontario and two more under investigation. The premier has yet to address the situation, and the health minister suggests the province's current strategy should suffice.
We are ready for whatever might happen.
But there are growing fears about whether Ontario's health care system can handle another surge. Ontario's Science Advisory Table suggests critical care units could be overwhelmed because hospital workers are burnt out, leading to a staffing shortage.
Physicians and nurses and respiratory therapists and lab technicians and the cleaners and everybody else who works in health care and hospitals is just exhausted. So the prospect of another serious wave of COVID-19 led by the new variant is the last thing anyone wants to hear. And
the Ontario Hospital Association says the system is stable but fragile. The worst case scenario needs to be avoided.
Surely we know now, Colin, surely we know after the experience in the third wave with at least 900 patients with COVID-related critical illness in ICUs, plus hundreds more in ward beds, what happens when Ontario's hospitals are overwhelmed in this pandemic.
But the province is still planning to dial back public health measures in the new year, which is coming under criticism.
Why is the premier scrapping vaccine certificates when we could use them to prevent another province-wide lockdown here in Ontario?
If there is that change in circumstances, we will have to modify that plan. But it's too soon to say right now. We are taking the necessary precautions.
For now, the government is looking at speeding up third doses of the COVID-19 vaccine to protect the province ahead of the variant.
And the health minister says Ontario will be revealing more details about that third dose strategy at some point this week. Premier Doug Ford is scheduled to hold a news conference tomorrow morning. We could hear more details then. Reporting live at Queen's Park, I'm Colin DeMello. Nathan, over to you.
All right, thank you, Colin. The Toronto Police Service has placed more than 200 employees on unpaid leave for failing to comply with a vaccine mandate. TPS says it has placed 205 members on leave for being unvaccinated or refusing to disclose their vaccine status. The number includes 117 uniformed officers and 88 civilian employees. Nearly 98% of Toronto Police's more than 7,400 employees have disclosed their vaccination status, with 98% of that group being fully vaccinated.
When it comes to eligible people 12 and older in Ontario, nearly 89.9% have received at least one dose of a COVID-19 vaccine, and more than 86.3% are considered fully vaccinated. That represents more than 11.2 million people in Ontario.
Still ahead, Toronto's plan to bring more workers back downtown. But what can they expect to find in the core? 20 months of quiet certainly takes a toll. But first, to a horrific situation unfolding at a high school in Michigan this afternoon. Three people killed in a shooting, several others hurt.
The suspected shooter is a 15-year-old student. CTV's Zarada Ullman is live with the newest development. Zarada.
Michelle, the FBI and U.S. Marshal are now in Oxford, Michigan, in what has been a multi-level response to this mass shooting at a local high school. Officials say the school does regular active shooter drills. That, along with the quick arrival of police, is what likely prevented more deaths.
It was just before 1 this afternoon when authorities say the calls started coming in. More than 100 911 calls to the dispatch center for an active shooter at Oxford High School in Oxford, Michigan. Multiple units arrived within minutes.
We had about 25 agencies that responded, close to 60 ambulances. We had a couple of helicopters land also.
The school went into lockdown. Students and staff barricaded themselves in. Within 5 minutes, police say they had located a suspect.
He did not cause any problems. He gave the weapon up. He did have the weapon on him at the time. It was a semi-automatic handgun.
A handgun that authorities say was fired multiple times. Close to two dozen shell casings littered around the school. Three students were killed.
A 16-year-old male, a 14-year-old female, and a 17-year-old female.
Eight others were also shot, transported to various local hospitals. Two are undergoing surgery. Six others are stable.
My heart goes out to the families. This is an unimaginable tragedy. I hope that we can all rise to the occasion and wrap our arms around the families.
The suspect in custody, a 15-year-old boy, a sophomore at the high school, who police say was in class before the gunfire started. Were the students targeted? What was the motive? They don't know. Police say neither the suspect nor his parents are talking.
We have talked to the parents, and all I can tell you is they didn't want their son to talk to us, and they've hired an attorney.
A search warrant is now being executed at the family home.
And the White House says the president has been briefed about the shooting and is receiving updates on the investigation. Speaking from Minnesota, U.S. President Joe Biden says his heart goes out to the families affected by the shooting. I'm Zoraida Allman. Michelle, back to you.
Thank you, Zoraida. Having your vehicle stolen is something nobody wants to experience. Now imagine it happening twice within days.
That's the reality facing a Toronto man. Making matters worse, he depends on having a car to make ends meet. CTV's Janice Golding is live with more on this one. Janice.
Hi, Nathan. Yes, an Etobicoke Uber driver has lost his means of making a living not once but twice in under a week after car thieves targeted his home.
Where was your car parked last night?
AJ Sansonwall is an Uber driver who depends on a vehicle to make his living. But at the moment, the Etobicoke man is carless. He's had not one, but two cars stolen from right outside his home in less than a week.
I'm scared for my life, for my family life.
You see another car pull up right by the curb.
Yeah.
Yeah,
see
and
that?
You see they wait for a while and one person gets out.
Sansonwall's daughter, Akanta, showed CTV News surveillance video of the most recent incident. It shows a dark-colored vehicle pull up just behind her father's rented Honda Civic a couple minutes before 4 a.m. About 40 seconds later, a man clad all in white emerges and slowly walks toward the driver's side door. He produces something in his hands and starts working on breaking into the sedan. It takes just 32 seconds to get the vehicle's door open, and in a little under 2 minutes, he and the driver of the other vehicle are on their way.
I'm scared, first of all, because it happened literally 2 feet away from where we were sleeping, right? It's unsafe because if someone has the audacity to come and steal our car right under our nose, they can come inside as well, right? You feel unsafe.
What makes matters worse is the Uber driver's own vehicle was stolen from outside his home last week.
Can you imagine living through that? It's so scary.
Last Wednesday, about 10 minutes to 3 a.m., Sansonwall's Honda CR-V was parked on the other side of his home. But this time, you can't see who steals it because the thief or thieves turn the home security cameras away from where the car was parked.
It seems to be anything with a push start.
Acting Inspector Paul Oliver of 31 Division says keyless remote entry cars are a particular target for thieves. When armed with high-tech scanning and booster devices, thieves can make off with a car in under 30 seconds.
What we're trying to do is get some car companies and the insurance companies to get on board to help us, because that's really the only way we're going to combat and stop this problem. The car manufacturers can put things in place that'll make it a lot harder to steal cars, make it a deterrence.
Both of the Sansonwall stolen vehicles had keyless ignitions, but they say they never expected this.
That's his full-time job. I mean, what will we do if he doesn't make the money?
And the recent immigrants from India say this comes as a bitter blow, given they've been working hard and saving to start a better life in Canada. Acting Inspector Oliver says if you do have a keyless fob, your best bet is to store it in a signal-blocking box or bag, often referred to as a Faraday box or pouch. You can also install a steering wheel lock, which serves as an added deterrent. Reporting live, I'm Janice Golding. Now back to Michelle.
Thank you, Janice. Well, we had a snowy start to the day, and the messy stuff is not through with us yet. Michelle Jobin is here with a look at the current conditions. What are you seeing, Michelle?
Well, Michelle, we are seeing these flurries and or showers continuing through the overnight. Now, we're not looking at necessarily heavy amounts, but there is a concern because temperatures are so close to the zero mark that we're going to see a mix of precipitation and or freezing rain in some regions, and that slicks up the roads quite a bit. Looking at our radar and satellite imagery, I see a few signatures on the radar where things have transitioned over to rainfall and or a mix of precipitation really close to the shorelines of Lake Ontario and over towards the Guelph through Hamilton region. We're also having some gustier winds tonight right now, sustained at 24 kilometers an hour in Toronto. They're gustier in southwestern Ontario, around 44 kilometers an hour in the Windsor area, and that's going to be with us through the overnight. Right now throughout the region, temperatures are bumping up above zero, but they're still close to that mark here in the city of Toronto. We are sitting at 3 degrees at the islands, 2 at the airport, and we're going to a low of 0 degrees tomorrow. I'll let you know what else is coming up very soon. Michelle?
Thank you. Well, it's time now for Toy Mountain, and this evening we are heading west.
West to Mississauga, and the party tonight is in Celebration Square, and that's where we find CTV's Andrea Case. Andrea.
Nathan and Michelle, good evening. Yes, we are here in Mississauga Celebration Square. It opened just a couple of days ago for the holidays. And joining me now is the fourth mayor of Mississauga.
That's right.
Bonnie Crombie joins us now. And Mayor, happy holidays to you. The question is, why should people donate to Toy Mountain? Because we are all building a mountain of toys and we need the help of the people of Mississauga.
Fantastic. Well, welcome to our beautiful Celebration Square. We lit up our beautiful tree about 10 days ago to help celebrate the holidays. Let me say, happy holidays. It's Hanukkah now. Merry Christmas to everyone as well as we go into that season. And this is a very special time of year, but it is also a time of great need. And people are especially vulnerable now, still suffering coming out of COVID. So we're asking people to be generous. In fact, it is Giving Tuesday today. So we're asking you to remember, please remember to donate to your favorite charity. I support the Mississauga Food Bank. But if you can't give, maybe consider volunteering your time or helping out a senior or a neighbor in need. There's lots of different ways to give back if you're not able to contribute financially or buy that toy and donate it. That unwrapped toy to the Salvation Army is always a great start too.
You are amazing. Thank you for taking the time this today. The holidays are coming up. I know you've been very busy. Any plans for you? Are you going to work right through?
Yes, we're going to work. I hope to take some downtime after our budget season, which is now, but it's certainly a magical time of year here in Mississauga. You can see how beautiful the square is, and I like to be here with my people, but of course we all need a little bit of downtime, okay. So we'll do some of that
now,
too.
Now, before you go, you studied French in Paris, correct?
I did.
Can you wish the viewers happy holidays?
Joyeux Noël tout le monde, voilà.
Thank you very much, Mayor Crombie. Thank you for joining us. You on the spot there,
no
and
problem.
I appreciate it. Stay with us, folks. Coming up, we're going to remind you how you can donate to Toy Mountain as we help build a mountain of toys, and we will have the toy total later on in the show. Reporting live from Mississauga, I'm Andrea Case. I'll send it back inside.
All right, thank you, Andrea. From Mississauga to Toronto, and the city's plan to bring back more workers to the downtown core.
And chances are for some of them, what they'll be returning to won't look familiar. CTV's Austin Delaney is live with more on that. Austin.
Well, after the holidays, the city of Toronto is planning to reopen all of its buildings, including City Hall, and bring back all of its workers. The mayor is hoping other companies in the core follow suit.
It is not a lot, but it is something. A small lineup at the Tim Hortons in the pathway under the office towers. Andrew Walty, who owns a pen shop around the corner, notes there is finally a bit of light.
It's slowly trickling uphill. You know, at first, you know, the lights were out and, you know, you could come be open, but now there's people showing up. There's a bit of traffic at lunchtime. You know, there was a lineup for bagels this morning, but not generally.
Caroline Tunks was just called back to her downtown job 2 weeks ago, along with about 30% of her coworkers.
There's just more people around, so more collaboration, more people to go for coffee with. So, yeah, it's been nice.
Still, the once crowded pathway, a sliver of what it was pre-pandemic. Many storefronts still shuttered. Outside, anecdotally, foot and vehicle traffic has picked up a bit at Bang Queen. Mayor John Tory hopes that will change in the new year, announcing that on January 4th, City Hall and city buildings will bring back all on-site staff, if just for 3 days a week.
It is my hope that this announcement inspires other businesses and employers to follow this example and to do the same, again, in a careful, safe, and responsible manner, subject to ongoing monitoring.
The Toronto Board of Trade applauds the mayor's announcement.
The mayor and his team took the first bold and very much needed step to say that they're confident that based on what we know today, you know, the January New Year timeframe is exactly the right time to come back. Other companies, the large banks and the financial district, many of those have also come out and said that they too are going to start with large cohorts of staff. These are thousands upon thousands of people to come to the downtown core.
Tory points out Toronto is just 116,000 jabs away from being 90% first dose vaccinated.
And Toronto's medical officer of health says the plan is to come back safely in the new year, but they're constantly checking the COVID numbers, and if things change, they'll have to change their plan. Reporting live, I'm Austin Delaney.
All right, thank you, Austin. Public Health Ontario is reporting 687 new COVID-19 cases in its most recent update. 379 of those cases are among people who either aren't fully vaccinated or their vaccination status is unknown. More than 21,000 tests have been processed in the last 24 hours. And the province's positivity rate is sitting at 3%.
560 more cases are considered resolved, raising that total to more than 601,000 over the course of the pandemic. Three additional deaths are linked to the virus. And look at that death total. As we noted earlier, that means 10,000 lives have now been lost to COVID-19 in Ontario.
Tonight's regional breakdown includes 94 new cases in the city of Toronto and 60 in Peel Region. There are 47 new cases in Halton, with 30 in York and 21 in Niagara. Durham Region has 18 new cases, with 17 in Hamilton.
Meanwhile, the Canadian Medical Association has released a report on the impact of the pandemic on the healthcare system. Delayed or missed healthcare services may have contributed to more than 4,000 excess deaths not related to COVID-19 between August and December of 2020. The CMA also says opioid-related deaths increased to nearly 20 per day in the first 3 months of 2021. Two-thirds of Canadians living with chronic diseases reported having difficulty accessing care in 2020. In Ontario, routine cancer screenings were paused, remaining between 20 to 35% below pre-pandemic levels as of last January. And there was a backlog of nearly 328,000 procedures across Canada. An estimated $1.3 billion is needed to return wait times for 8 key procedures to pre-pandemic levels. And these next numbers are also startling. Police responding to thousands of calls each year involving mental health or addiction issues.
In Peel alone, that works out to more than a dozen incidents a day. And so the force is hoping a new initiative will give those in need the right services at the right time. CTV's John Musselman is live in Mississauga with more. John.
That's absolutely right. And what police have done is partnered with community organizations to give police a strategy to deal with this.
She ended up cracking the door open enough that we could...
Peel Regional Police produced this video to showcase how the department plans to work with local partners to help them deal with residents experiencing mental health or addiction issues.
Improve service to individuals in need.
Police are often the first contact in a crisis, and this new initiative is aimed at improving that frontline strategy.
I know for sure if you take anybody that has had mental health crisis, the amount of times they've been in their family doctor's office, emergency room, maybe they've called us to help them with their support plan, maybe it's been a paramedic. They all represented an opportunity, if it was coordinated, to off-ramp somebody before it got to crisis.
Take a look at these numbers. In 2020, Peel Regional Police responded to nearly 6,000 calls involving mental health or addiction issues. That averages to about 16 a day. The aim is to prevent devastating incidents like this one that claimed the life of Ijaz Chaudhry. The 62-year-old was shot by police in June 2020 after he barricaded himself inside an apartment in Malton. Chaudhry was a father of four. He suffered from mental health issues and he did not speak English. He was armed with a knife when he was confronted by police who entered the back of the unit from the balcony.
Mental health is a big challenge.
Local resident Salman Tariq says Chaudhry's death rocked the community. He attended the memorials and the protests. He also started a petition called Justice for Ijaz Chaudhry. He says he is optimistic this could help.
They should have mental health experts available 7/24 dealing with these kind of calls, because loss of any precious life is loss of humanity, and we don't want to see that again.
The province's special investigations unit later cleared the officer involved in the shooting, saying he acted reasonably when Chaudhry failed to drop the knife. Catherine Wigan is the manager of the John Howard Society in Peel.
I think the training, the information, the resources, the effort, the energy that they have right now in wanting to make that change will make a difference.
Police and community partners say the key here is building trust in the community. And all the partners and police gathered for this news conference here at Peel Region Police Headquarters. Reporting live, I'm John Musselman. I'll send it back to you.
Thank you, John. On the West Coast, British Columbians are being urged to avoid non-essential travel as the province prepares for a third storm.
Late today, we are expecting a significant storm forecast to last into Wednesday afternoon. In some areas, such as the Central Coast, this could be the most intense storm yet.
The atmospheric river is expected to deliver more heavy rain to communities that remain flooded from previous storms. Parts of Vancouver Island could get up to 150 millimeters. BC's state of emergency is in effect until at least December 14th.
Tiger Woods made headlines earlier this year when he crashed his SUV in a scary accident, sending one of the world's greatest golfers to hospital.
Woods holding his first press conference today since the crash, updating the world on his recovery and potential comeback. CTV's Raheem Ladani is in studio with more. Raheem.
Well, Michelle and Nathan, Tiger Woods says he went through some dark moments while he was in the hospital, but that he began to see some light as his recovery progressed, and that he's come to terms with the reality he'll never be the golfer he once was.
It's been 9 months since Tiger Woods' horrific crash, and today he's opening up about the accident.
I'm lucky to be alive, but also still had the limb. Very grateful that someone upstairs was taking care of me.
Woods ran his SUV over a median, which then toppled down a steep hill, caused by his speeding down a winding road in Los Angeles back in February. He shattered his tibia and fibula bones in his right leg, confining him to a hospital bed for months.
It's hard to explain how difficult it's been just to be immobile for 3 months and just lay there, and I was just looking forward to just getting outside.
The 15-time major champion, though, has made remarkable progress, even able to find humor in his recovery.
I built a really nice house, but I didn't realize how big it was until you started putting crutches on.
Tiger posted this video last week, showing the world he's ditched the crutches and picked up the clubs. However, the 45-year-old says he will never play golf full-time again, but with his family's blessing, still hopes to compete at certain tournaments.
All of us sat down and said, if this leg cooperates and I get to a point where I can play the tour, is it okay with you guys if I try and do it? And the consensus was yes.
Before the accident, Woods had already undergone a combined 10 surgeries on his knee and back, leaving many in the game wondering if this is the end of an era.
Golf is still very much a part of his life and a part of his love, but I think it's a different type of Tiger now. I think he realizes where he is.
And for Woods, that now means prioritizing other aspects of his life.
I'm able to participate more with my kids and their activities, and more and just in life in general. So I'm on that side, as I said, I'm on the positive side.
Now, Woods also said he never watched any coverage of the accident while he was in hospital because he wasn't mentally prepared for it, and that he hasn't had any flashbacks or PTSD from the crash. Reporting live, I'm Raheem Ladani. Michelle, back to you.
Thank you, Raheem. A new republic was born at the stroke of midnight. The Queen is no longer head of state in Barbados.
The creation of this republic offers a new beginning.
A ceremony was held in the capital after the Caribbean island elected its first ever president last month in a two-thirds majority vote. Rihanna was honored as a national hero during the historic moment for her country. The pop star was given the title The Right Excellence in recognition of her extraordinary commitment to her homeland. Back here, a new report says people in Toronto are deciding to return to driving faster than almost any other way of getting around.
As CTV's John Woodward reports, some groups are concerned that could spell danger during the holiday season.
Rusty and his kids, Reese and Ava, used to get around all different ways. Since the pandemic, they take the family car or stay home.
You want to stay safe in your own bubble. You don't want to share closed spaces with people outside your bubble.
A decision made by many and reflected in new data presented to City Hall. Ride-hailing trips dropped to 15% of pre-pandemic levels in April 2020. By July of this year, that had recovered to about 43%. That's a faster recovery than transit at 38% as of July, and even walking at 33%. Downtown bicycling has recovered to 76%, and downtown vehicle volumes are at 74%.
I think there's probably a greater sense of perception of safety, right, in terms of transmission of disease in a ride-hailing vehicle than on public transit. Whether it's true or not is a totally different matter.
The TTC has cut some service, and the city has stopped approving new ride-hailing licenses while they wait for a long-promised training system to start. That has Mothers Against Drunk Driving concerned that when the holiday season comes, too many people will decide to drink and drive.
We're going to have no drivers available, and then when they're available, the cost will be through the roof, and people are going to make really bad decisions. We're actually going to put impaired driving back to where we were before ride sharing.
The city report says the ride hailing delays have risen from about 2.5 minutes to about 5.8 minutes a trip.
which is extremely fast. If you and I had a cardiac arrest right now, it would take on average about 6 minutes for an ambulance to pick us up.
Another concern for the city, congestion and the environment. Ride-hailing vehicles are much less efficient than other modes because of the amount of time they spend driving with no passengers.
Nowadays, the pandemic is getting a little bit down, so because of that, I used train.
An attitude some hope will prevail after drinking at any holiday event. John Woodward, CTV News.
Still ahead, a sweet surprise on this Giving Tuesday. A local school, the latest stop on a journey to bake it forward.
And I'm Pat Foran. Coming up on Consumer Alert, Ontario's electricity utilities are warning the public to be on the lookout for scammers. Criminals are sending fake text letters and bills and are calling customers demanding payment, or they say they'll shut off your power. It's a scam. I'll have my report just ahead.
Well, December arrives tomorrow, and with it, it comes with some normal weather that we usually expect. We'll see if that pans out, but our average high for this time of the year, just 1.4 degrees, average low, minus 5.8. Normally, we expect about 25 centimeters of snow in the month of December and about 34 millimeters of rain. And interestingly enough, we've had the snow leading up to the start of December. Tomorrow night, we're looking at rainfall, and it's not going to be a lot of accumulation, a little bit more as we head into Thursday north of the city, but what we're going to look at is some sustained showers through the overnight and into Thursday. I'll be back with your full forecast. Stay with us for that. We'll be back in 2 minutes.
Ontario's five largest electricity providers are joining together to warn the public about ongoing scams leading up to the holidays.
Criminals are sending out fake texts and bills and even calling customers demanding payment, or they say they'll shut off your power. Pat Foran has the story on Consumer Alert. Pat.
Thanks, Michelle and Nathan. The companies have come together because they say the holidays are prime time for scammers trying to catch people off guard. Customers are being warned to pay extra attention to any communication from your electric company to make sure it's the real thing. Scammers have been ramping up their fake phone calls, texts, and even falsifying bills so they look like the real thing. Ontario's largest electricity utilities came together to warn the public after all of them heard from customers regarding scams.
We always receive these reports of scams. It gets increasingly higher during the holidays when people are, you know, busy enjoying the season.
Scams involve impersonation of a local utility or its employees, threatening phone calls, texts, or emails, pressure for immediate payment, threats to disconnect service the same day, and demand for prepaid debit cards, gift cards, or Bitcoin. Utilities say they would never call a customer without notice and threaten disconnection.
People have been calling customers, and they've been saying, listen, you know what, you need to pay your bill immediately, or we're going to disconnect you. So that's something that your utility would never do.
Scammers are also creating fake bills that look like the real thing.
Scammers will actually take our Electra logo, our letterhead, and send out very authentic looking documents to people's homes.
Customers are advised to never make a payment not listed on a recent bill, to ignore texts or emails with links promising refunds, don't call the number provided, call the utility directly to check your account, and don't provide personal information or details about your account. Some scammers have even been going door to door demanding payment. Anyone who feels threatened is advised to call police. And you may want to warn family and friends to be careful if they're contacted by someone claiming to be with their electric company. If you fall for the scam and the money is sent, it's very difficult to get it back. On your side, I'm Pat Foran.
If you have a consumer story idea, email us at alert@ctv.ca.
I remember not long ago, it seemed like we were always above seasonal, but things have changed.
Mm-hmm, they have, although it's nice to hear that maybe we're going to have a little bit of a meltdown just over the next few days.
Well,
if
you're looking for the warmer temperatures, and Nathan, if you're looking for the above seasonal, Nathan, Michelle, we have that on the way for you. So that is the good news. And we're actually holding very close to seasonal today. The dip up to above seasonal is short-lived, though, so we'll talk about that. Weather is brought to you by Trane, the most reliable heating and cooling brand. It's hard to stop a Trane. Okay, so in terms of temperature, we actually might see a bump up by a degree or so snow in the next little while in the city of Toronto. Right now, we are sitting at 2 degrees at Pearson, 3 degrees downtown. Some gustier winds tonight, so be aware of that if you're heading out, because that'll amplify how cool things feel. But what we're going to see is that affect our precipitation, because we're so close to the zero mark. We have flurries changing over to rain and then back to flurries again throughout the region. And then other areas, southwestern Ontario, extending over towards the shores of Lake Erie, could very likely see some freezing drizzle through the overnight. So I'm quite concerned about the roads really throughout the region, but especially there. 0 degrees overnight is where we'll fall back to, with a wind chill of -5 with those gustier winds out of the west. And then as we head into tomorrow, this is seasonal, spot on seasonal, in fact, and a bit of an abnormal temperature pattern tomorrow, because yet again tomorrow, we'll see our temperature tick up a little bit as we get into the evening. So our overnight low Wednesday into Thursday will be warmer than our daytime high. We'll start the day with a mix of sun and cloud, and then we'll get some showers moving in later on. So temperature fluctuating a little bit. Here's a look at our upper air pattern. We dip back into the colder weather, but not too cold as we get later on. Satellite and radar looking like this right now, and I'm seeing close to the shores of Lake Ontario and even over towards Hamilton, up towards Guelph, a mix of precipitation and or a transition over to rain, and that's going to make the roads really slick right now. The other concern we have throughout the overnight period is the possibility of fog outside of the GTA, especially extending into southwestern Ontario, and that's going to affect visibility on the roads. So this system, it's going to take a little bit of time to roll through, but as it does, we have another one on the way. But we get some sunshine before that tomorrow. So most of the day tomorrow, it's going to be quite pleasant, quite seasonal, not too breezy, but a little bit breezy, and we'll see the sun. I'm going to set the forecast radar in motion for you as we can see how things play out over the next little while. So we'll get some flurries off of the Upper Great Lakes. Here's a look at tomorrow morning, some clearing. I think the roads will still be a little bit slick in the morning, but we should see the precipitation end in the GTA by the time we get to 5 a.m. And then the next system rolls in. Early in the evening tomorrow, 4 o'clock, 5 o'clock, we could see a few showers or a mix of precipitation. Then rain does move in. It stays with us into Thursday, and then we cool down in behind that afterwards. So on the way tomorrow, 4 degrees, 5 overnight into Thursday, then 7 degrees, dropping to -3. We get flurries and zero on Friday, and staying cooler right through the weekend into the beginning next week with some flurries. Back to you, Michelle.
Thank you. We could not build a toy mountain without you.
Right, let's head back to Mississauga, Celebration Square, and CTV's Andrea Case. Andrea.
Nathan and Michelle, we are still here. Yes, it is a beautiful night, and look who's here. It's the folks from Walmart Canada. Megan, you brought the gang here. Why did you decide to take part in helping us raise a mountain of toys?
Walmart is so proud to support Toy Mountain year after year. This is the season for giving, and every kid deserves a great holiday season. Today, we're very excited to present a check for the Salvation Army for...
Drumroll, please!
$1,000! Woo!
And Megan, you have a message for the folks at home.
On behalf of Walmart Canada, we want to wish everyone a very Merry Christmas and magical holiday season.
There you go. Okay, and so hello, everybody. This is the York Punjabi Association, and you not only arrived here, but you brought toys. The toys are in the vehicle behind us here. We have Prisha and Just Meet, and tell us why you decided to donate toys, get together as a group.
So thank you so much for having us here on behalf of York Punjabi Association. We were brought up with the idea of Seva, which is selfless service. So being able to donate to our community and help the community that we always take so much from is really humbling experience. And to be able to put a smile on kids' face is really exciting.
Okay, did she say it all or anything else?
So we've actually been able to double our donation from previously. We've donated $2,600 worth of toys. This was in part as we're celebrating the repealment of the three farming bills that farmers across India have been fighting for the past year and a half.
A message and a message. Hey, everybody, thanks very much. And what are we all trying to do here? Coming up after the break, we will be talking about how many toys have been raised. Reporting live from Mississauga Celebration Square. I'll set it back inside.
To a special surprise now for some deserving kids in the Regent Park neighborhood this afternoon.
Baking it forward in time for the holiday season. CTV's Beth McDonnell reports.
You guys are first up, so come on up. Don't be shy. outside school this Giving Tuesday, a class of grade 7 students downtown were handed a sweet surprise.
It was a bit shocking. Like, I didn't really expect it. And I was also, like, happy and thankful.
They are among the first to be gifted Gay Lee Foods baking kits. They come with a pot holder, butter, and a recipe book sharing traditions of family holiday treats and the people who lovingly make them.
I bake a lot with my mom and my sisters, always, so it's going to be really helpful, especially with the pot holder. And I'm excited to try out the butter.
I bake a lot with my family. I want to try making cake pops.
It's part of a campaign to bake it forward and celebrate the season. From here, the vintage-inspired truck is making 1,400 door-to-door deliveries around the GTA, Hamilton, London, and Barrie.
The idea is to encourage people to make that connection and to realize that not only are we making connections in the kitchen, but this is how people demonstrate their love.
To make this Giving Tuesday more special, the students also got a book and ice cream. This December, the buttermaker is donating baking supplies to Rex's Ice Cream, known for its African-infused flavors, so more profits can go towards the shop's book program for youth.
The beautiful thing about giving is, like, it's a two-way street. The person receiving is getting something, and also you're feeling better about yourself.
Students who received the kit say they like giving back.
I think it's good that we could actually, like, give back to the community.
I think it's really cool, and I think a lot of people are going to be excited about it. And everybody was like, I want free ice cream. And then, boom, we got free ice cream.
Along with enjoying desserts over the holidays. Beth McDonnell, CTV News.
A veteran member of the Toronto International Film Festival has been appointed chief executive officer. TIFF's board of directors says they have great confidence in Cameron Bailey's ability to steer the organization through an ever-changing industry. Bailey, you might remember, previously served as the festival's artistic director and co-director before that. Most recently, he was co-head with Joanna Vincent before she left to become CEO of the Sundance Institute.
Adele will return to the stage in January after a four-year hiatus. The British singer announced a series of concerts in Las Vegas today. She'll perform two shows every weekend from January to April at Caesars Palace. The residency follows the release of Adele's new album, 30. It debuted at number one in 30 countries.
Stars Tonight is brought to you by Lastman's Bad Boy. Who's better? Nobody.
All air travelers coming from outside Canada, apart from the United States, will now need to be tested at the airport in which they are landing in Canada.
Updating our top stories, Ottawa's introducing border restrictions aimed at limiting the spread of the COVID-19 Omicron variant. Travelers from all countries except the U.S. will now be subject to COVID tests at the airport.
The loss of any life is extremely sad, and we our condolences go to the families of those who have lost family members.
And 10,000 Ontarians have lost their lives as a result of COVID-19. Now there is concern the province's healthcare system may not be able to deal with strain from a potential surge in cases created by a new variant.
On the markets, the Canadian dollar was down 13 basis points to 78.28 U.S. American benchmark oil slid 3.77 a barrel to close at 66.18. And the TSX Composite Index lost 489 points to close at 20,660. A new report is highlighting the stress on Ontario's critical care system.
And that's the focus of a discussion on CP24 tonight. We're joined by Reshmi Nair and Lena Latifat. Lena, you're digging further into that.
That's right, Michelle. We're hearing from the Ontario Science Table today, coming out with this new warning that hospitals, ICUs, will not be able to cope if there is an influx of COVID-19 patients. Here's the reason why. This report cites worsening staffing shortages right across the province in the healthcare sector and more healthcare workers burning out. So what can we be doing about this? We'll take a closer look.
And Reshmi, there's a call out for suggestions to rename Ryerson University, but a group wants to put a stop to the process.
Yes, Nathan, it is a newly formed group called Friends of Egerton Ryerson. They wrote a letter to the premier asking the government get involved in the university's decision to rename itself. We're going to have that conversation coming up on CP24 tonight.
Thank you, Rashmi. Thank you, Lena. And CP24 tonight airs immediately following this newscast on CP24 from 7 to 9. Andrea.
I'm Zaret Allman. Coming up, the province reaches a grim milestone. 10,000 Ontarians have now died as a result of COVID-19. Plus, why the science advisory table says ICUs may not be able to handle another surge of virus cases. Tonight at 11:30.
Let's head back to beautiful Celebration Square in Mississauga.
And Andrea, you've got a new toy total for us.
We do, but very quickly, Jeff Arkell from Mississauga, why is it important that people donate to Toy Mountain?
So important. Your toys help us to bring hope to each child at Christmas, not only at Christmas, but the whole year round. So thank you so much.
Okay, and if Glenn Van Gulik is here, it could only mean one thing, Glenn.
Toy total, 24,738 toys. Thank you. Thank you for your support. Wonderful.
Thanks for helping us build a toy mountain. We'll have the Salvation Army band strike it up. We'll see you tomorrow. Good night, everyone.
Thank you all. What a haul tonight. Appreciate
it. Great work.
Weather-wise, some light rain in Toronto. What are you seeing right now, Michelle?
Well, what we're looking at in terms of weather over the next little while is our temperature bumping up a little bit in the next few hours or so, possibly to 3 degrees and then falling again. So we're sitting at 2 right now. Any precipitation we'll see in the next little while will be snow. Changing over to rain, could see some freezing rain. Hamilton over to Guelph in the Niagara region along the shores of Lake Ontario. So be aware of that. We'll have an overnight low of 0, feeling like -5. Tomorrow, 4 degrees. Chance of showers late in the afternoon into the evening. Temperature going up overnight till to 5, showers Thursday and 7, and then the temperature drops Thursday to -3, and we'll see some flurries for the rest of the week. Back to you, Nathan.
All right, thanks, Michelle. Be sure to join Zaret Allman later tonight for CTV News at 11:30.
You can also stay up to date by going to our website. And a reminder, CP24 tonight begins momentarily on CP24.
For Michelle Jobin and all of us at CTV News, have a good night.
Good night.